A contractor strolls through a bank's wire transfer room, casually glancing at clerks' desks. Days later, he walks out with $10.2 million without touching a single computer. A teenager talks his way past three security guards at a military aviation facility in the middle of the night. A friendly voice on the phone convinces a bookkeeper to install software that hands over complete control of his computer. These aren't scenes from a spy thriller. They're real attacks that exploit the most vulnerable component of any security system, you. We've been sold a comforting lie that firewalls, encryption, and authentication systems keep us safe. But while we obsess over password strength and software updates, attackers simply call the front desk and ask for what they want. And shockingly often, we give it to them. Stanley Mark Rifkin proved that the biggest bank heist in history required no weapons, no hacking skills, not even a computer. While developing a backup system for Security Pacific National Bank in 1978, he noticed something remarkable. Employees wrote each day's security code on slips of paper. During one visit, he memorized the code while pretending to take notes. From a lobby payphone, he called the wire transfer room, identified himself as Mike Hanfin from International, and provided the stolen code. When asked for an unexpected settlement number, he didn't panic. He simply called another department, posed as a wire room employee, obtained the number, and completed the transfer of $10.2 million to Switzerland. Days later, he converted $8 million to diamonds and smuggled them home in a money belt. What makes this story terrifying isn't Rifkin's cleverness, it's how ordinary his tactics were. He didn't exploit a technical vulnerability, he exploited something far more fundamental, our assumption that people making reasonable-sounding requests are who they claim to be. Consider the numbers. 85% of organizations detected security breaches in a single year, with 64% suffering financial losses. Yet most companies spend more on coffee than on security training. We install sophisticated technology while ignoring the human factor, the equivalent of building a vault with steel walls and leaving the door wide open. Americans aren't trained for suspicion. We're raised to trust our neighbors, help colleagues, and assume good intentions. This openness is beautiful until someone weaponizes it against us. Building names and cost center numbers seem harmless until combined strategically. Private investigator Oscar Grace needed confidential banking information for a divorce case. He made three simple phone calls. First, he called one bank asking innocent questions about credit checks, a customer screening service, claiming to write a book. Next, he called another bank, posing as a credit check's representative conducting a survey, obtaining their merchant ID number, essentially a password for the entire system. Finally, he contacted credit checks directly, impersonated the bank, and received complete banking history for his target. Headhunter Dee Dee Sands obtained a corporate directory through similar tactics. She called the receptionist asking for the transportation department while casually mentioning building names, receiving extensions and department numbers. She convinced an accounts receivable employee to explain cost center numbers by posing as a confused colleague. Finally, she persuaded someone in publications to mail her a complete directory charged to the cost center she'd just learned. These attacks succeed because each request appears innocent. The receptionist shared a phone number. The accountant explained a numbering system. The publications clerk mailed a directory. None realized they were pieces in a larger puzzle. That worthless information becomes a master key. The most effective deception is sometimes no deception at all, just asking directly. An attacker needed an unlisted phone number, so he called the phone company posing as a cable splicer dealing with fire damage. Using technical terminology and a sympathetic scenario, he got the number plus detailed line information within minutes. When fugitive Frank Parsons needed to know whether submitting fingerprints would expose him, he called the state patrol claiming to conduct research. The expert explained they only checked state records, not the national database. Parsons confidently applied for his job. These attackers made requests that sounded entirely reasonable, using appropriate terminology and creating scenarios justifying their needs. The victims weren't careless. they were helpful employees responding to apparently legitimate requests. Sometimes attackers play the long game. Rick Daggett wanted credit card information from a video store. Over several weeks, he repeatedly called employee Jenny, pretending to be Tommy Allison from another branch. He made friendly small talk and built rapport. When he finally called with an emergency, a crashed car had damaged his computer system, Jenny readily provided customer account details. She trusted him because he'd become a familiar colleague. Trust doesn't always require weeks. A young man named Henry called a video store from a restaurant, claimed to be a manager experiencing computer problems, and within minutes obtained his father's complete credit card details. The only defense is systematic verification. Record caller information, hang up, confirm the person exists in company records, and call back using the official number. Trust, but verify every single time. The most insidious manipulation involves solving problems you yourself created. When someone rescues you from difficulty, gratitude clouds judgment. You trust them and never suspect they engineered everything. At Starboard Shipbuilding, Eddie Martin from the help desk warned Tom DeLay about potential network problems, getting Tom to identify his network port and provide his cell number. 2 days later, the attacker posed as Tom's colleague and had the Network Operations Center disable Tom's port, creating the very problem he'd warned about. When Tom's connection failed, he called Eddie, who fixed everything immediately. Leveraging Tom's gratitude, Eddie convinced him to download protective software, then had Tom delete it to hide evidence. The software was actually a Trojan horse that had already installed, giving complete remote access. New employees make perfect targets. They don't know procedures and desperately want to help. When Alex from corporate security called Andrea in human resources, requesting information about new hires for a security seminar, she readily provided names and extensions. The attacker then called new employee Rosemary Morgan, posing as Bill Jorday from information security, and manipulated her into revealing her username and password. Even security-conscious companies remain vulnerable. Engineer Steve Kramer received a weekend call from Ramon Perez in tech support claiming servers were down. Though initially suspicious, Steve was convinced when Ramon correctly identified an old password, obtained through reconnaissance to establish credibility. The only defense is education, teaching employees to maintain appropriate suspicion when strangers request computer or network access, regardless of how helpful they seem. Social engineers exploit emotional triggers that bypass rational thinking: sympathy, guilt, fear of authority, and the desire to help. David Harold wanted studio access. He called Dorothy, playing an overwhelmed animation development newcomer. Her sympathy kicked in. She remembered her own first day confusion. She provided the security office number and offered personal help. Using her name, he obtained a legitimate visitor badge and spent the day exploring active film shoots unchallenged. Name dropping creates instant pressure through implied authority. When Christopher Dalbridge called Scott Abrams claiming to represent a consulting firm hired by the CEO, he suggested Scott had failed to send required research. Faced with potentially angering an executive, Scott complied immediately. Even government agencies fall victim. A caller identifying as Arthur Arndale from the Inspector General's office contacted Mei Lin Wong at the Social Security Administration. He established rapport by complaining about budget constraints and an unsympathetic boss. Playing on sympathy, he claimed he couldn't access his computer and needed help with a quick inquiry. Mei Lin readily provided sensitive citizen information, including social security number, birthplace, parents' names, and earnings history. Sometimes manipulation is simple anxiety creation. Mary Harris found Peter Shepard from technical support on the phone Monday morning, troubleshooting weekend computer complaints. By suggesting her computer might malfunction, he created anxiety that made her eager for help. After building rapport, he talked her through changing her password to test123, then immediately used it himself. These attacks succeed by exploiting fundamental human nature. Psychologist Robert Cialdini identified 6 principles attackers exploit: authority, liking, reciprocity, consistency, social validation, and scarcity. Attackers don't need sophisticated technology. They need only to understand what makes us tick. At 2:16 a.m., security guard Leroy Green found two men touring a helicopter plant's production line. The intruder claimed to be Tom Stilm from marketing, showing a friend around. Without ID, he said his badge was in the car. Visitor records appeared legitimate. Leroy called Stilton's boss, Judy Underwood, who confirmed employing him. After their brief call, Leroy allowed the tour. 10 minutes later, the real Underwood called back. She didn't know the imposter, who had dominated their conversation to prevent questions. The intruders had vanished. Three officers failed because they didn't demand photo ID, escort visitors to retrieve badges, accompany them throughout, or record their license plate. Physical security includes protecting discarded materials. During high school, I regularly searched phone company dumpsters, finding internal directories, computer manuals, and technical documentation. Oracle was once caught attempting to bribe janitors for Microsoft-affiliated garbage. For social engineers, dumpster diving provides organizational charts, employee names, and information invaluable for targeted attacks. Disgruntled employees pose significant threats. When Harlan Fortas was transferred from highway to sanitation, he sought revenge by enlisting a teenager to install remote access software on an office computer. That evening, the teenager accessed the department head's computer using his commonly known password, downloaded his budget presentation, and uploaded a modified version containing pornographic images. These displayed during a packed county council meeting, humiliating the department head as Fortas had been humiliated. To prevent physical breaches, require employees without badges to obtain temporary ones, enforce visible badge policies with consequences, and establish procedures for off-hours visits. Train employees to challenge unbadged individuals regardless of confidence. Implement proper document destruction, secure dumpsters, and immediately terminate computer access when employees depart. No technology prevents social engineering. The only defense is a properly trained workforce that understands attacker tactics and the psychological vulnerabilities they exploit. Security tests reveal social engineering succeeds nearly 100% of the time against untrained employees. Experts recommend allocating 40% of security budgets to awareness training, yet most organizations spend far less. Distributing policy pamphlets isn't enough. Success requires genuine management commitment, ongoing training for everyone with access to sensitive data, and continuous updates addressing evolving threats. Nearly all social engineering attacks share one element, deception. Most could be prevented if employees followed two simple steps: verify the person's identity and verify their authorization. Consistently instilling these verification habits would dramatically decrease risk. Comprehensive security policies provide clear guidelines covering data classification, information handling, phone protocols, passwords, and remote access. Data classification categorizes information by sensitivity: confidential, most sensitive; private, internal only; internal, freely available to employees; and public, designated for release. Critical protocols include verifying caller identity through confirming identity, employment, and authorization. Employees must never reveal passwords without written consent from IT management, never use the same passwords across different systems, and never use corporate passwords on internet sites. When employees leave, HR must immediately disable all access. In a world where the most dangerous hacker carries no laptop, where trust is the ultimate vulnerability, the choice is clear: educate, verify, and remain vigilant. Because the next friendly voice asking for just a small favor might cost your company everything.